My name is Harry de Koning. I'm a professor of public health at Erasmus MC, University Medical Center Rotterdam in the Netherlands.
The idea of screening for lung cancer is as old as the hills, of course, and most people won't remember the days of mass radiography that came in when the relationship between smoking and lung cancer was first discovered. But can you give me some of the background to this very interesting study you've now published in the New England Journal on volume CT screening as a means of picking up cases of lung cancer early? What led to this study that you've now published?
Yeah, so this Nelson trial that we published in New England Journal of Medicine really started off in 1999 or so, when we debated the possibility of using this volume CT screening, a new CT technique, to find nodules earlier. And in fact, it was the pulmonologist from Rotterdam who came, I think, from the U.S. with where he saw something. Should it not be possible? And so, indeed, in the early 2000s or so, we designed a randomized control trial using volume CT scanning in a population four times compared to a random population. So they were randomized, they had informed consent, where they got no screening.
Now, this was a nodule volume rather than nodule diameter. Can you explain the difference and why this might make a difference?
Yeah, so we certainly already now know it really is a difference, actually. But indeed, the point is that, for instance, the American trial used a certain cutoff, and everyone above, I think, the 4 millimeters was found positive and referred. But it led, in fact, to about 20% or more referrals. So what we did is actually we looked at the volume, so really in the three-dimensional way, and with that, we at the end only referred 2% for further investigation.
And what was the crucial difference between either diameter nodule scanning or volume scanning as compared with plain radiography, for instance?
Yeah, so to some extent, indeed, had the lung rest, the Americans are now actually increasing the cutoff a little bit more because they understand that 4 millimeters is probably too much, basically. So they are indeed thinking about maybe under 6 or 7 is still a negative nodule, and above that maybe it should be referred for suspicious for cancer. So you can play around with that, but we simply know that volumetric measurements are simply much, much, much more accurate. So to see a difference in the growth rate with the volume versus a diameter, that's really a big, big difference. So we think the quality is simply better. And what we did, there was a sort of indeterminate nodules, sort of in between let's say 100 and 300 cubic millimeters, where we said, we don't know, it's probably a scar. The only way to find out is to repeat the scan. So in about 9%, we did that, and only about 1% was then referred or so. This volume CT scan is really so much more sensitive than the old plain radiography.
Indeed, the old plain radiography that began when the first indications that smoking caused lung cancer came out simply wasn't cost effective and didn't detect cases early enough, did it?
No, not at all. So there are some. So there have been big randomized trials even using that, and they were sort of completely negative. And in fact, if they look back and looked a little bit about stages, and so they may have advanced the diagnosis. There are reports on that with maybe 2 or 3 months. That was the best you can get. And here we are talking about years that we can advance the diagnosis.
Now, indeed, you've done a very big study. Will you describe it to me? It's a big study. It's also got long follow-up.
Yeah, so basically we initially had a male trial that I can explain later, but that really had to do with funding, not enough funding to even increase it to the same proportion of women. But basically we have about 14,000 male smokers and ex-smokers at a certain risk. They were randomized between two arms, screening or no screening. And the screening arm basically got 4 CT scans. And then basically what you do, it sounds much simpler, of course, than it is, but what you do is you then try to find cancer earlier in the screening group, treat them earlier, and then you basically hope that this is more effective. But for that, you basically need to then have a follow-up of about 10 years or so to look basically at the lung cancer deaths in both arms, whether it has succeeded.
Additionally, you had another study with women, didn't you?
Yeah, correct. So we did a first recruitment in males, and like the year next or so, we also included women because, of course, we fully realized it was important. So in fact, we had about 2,500 women, also randomized, same way, same design, same volumetric measurements. And in fact, we find a statistically significant difference in lung cancer mortality between the two arms, also in the females, and actually even bigger than in the males.
Were you looking for lung cancer mortality specifically or overall mortality in your groups, by the way?
Yeah, no, specifically lung cancer mortality. You're doing these trials to find lung cancer early and hopefully get a reduction. So lung cancer mortality is the key outcome. If you would like to look at all-cause mortality as an outcome, then you basically need trials that are like 10 times larger. So we did an analysis recently. You would then needed like 50,000, 50 people per arm. So that's simply way too costly and a waste of resources. You do a trial to show whether it reduces lung cancer mortality. And if that's a major important disease, then of course you know you will have an effect later on also in all-cause mortality, but the trial is not powered enough to show that.
Now, on my quick reading through the Nelson study, it seems that you have a very clearly significant, certainly statistically significant finding. Can you run me through what you found, in fact?
Yeah, so we had about 14,000 male participants randomized between screening and no screening. And then after 10 years follow-up, we basically found a 24% difference, a 24% reduction in lung cancer mortality in the screening arm compared to the control arm. And in the years before, like year 8 and 9, we already basically found the same difference, looking backwards now, basically. And in the female subgroup, so the proportion of females, we even found a 33% reduction at 10 years of time. But in the years before that, years 7, 8, and 9, we even found a larger reduction that was statistically significant in the females. So basically a bigger effect in females and statistically significant.
And the confidence interval is such that it does not overlap with 1 by any means and has quite a sharp p-value indicating clear statistical significance of this finding of risk reduction.
Yeah, the trial really is the power trial, apart from the US trial that was published a couple of years ago already that was really bigger. This one is the other trial that has power enough to show an effect, and we are, of course, all glad that both big trials found an effect.
Now, what about false negatives and the implications of those? Did they impact your study at all?
Yeah, so of course, in any screening program, you are not able to detect everything. There is not 100% sensitivity, as you can imagine, although this technique is quite good. So within the interval between screens, you will find a couple of cancers that you missed. You will also find cancers that are simply growing so fast that you didn't miss them, but they pop up in between. But we carefully looked at that, and actually the interval cancer cases, there was not so much that we missed. So in fact, if I would say the sensitivity, how good is your test? It's probably in the order of about 90% or so, or 80-90% at least.
And you're not detecting things that are not cancer?
And we are almost not detecting cancers that are tumors that are not cancer. So indeed, there has been surgery, of course, on lesions that appear to be benign at the end. It's the unfortunate thing of screening in general. If you would be too stringent with referring, then you would probably not have a benefit. So, but it's really limited, and it's really actually lower than we see in clinical care.
Right, now this is low-dose CT. What's the implication of that, and how important is the toxicity of this scanning?
Yeah, what I understand is that the radiation is like less than 2 millisievert or so per scan, or maybe only 1 point something, and that is really, really low. And I recently saw a graph that says that in the U.S., a person on average, based on all the medical investigations and the natural radiation, they get about 6 millisievert or so per year. And so this is in the order of 1.5 or so, to just give you a bit of a comparison.
What are the clinical implications of these very significant findings?
Yeah, the next step would really be to start implementing lung cancer screening in countries. So the U.S. has started to some extent based on the first trial. I think most of the European countries have really been waiting for this one to be the second trial to show something and to be the trial with a low referral rate. So we will start a project of implementation this year, or we have started already since 1st of January. But I think many European countries are now about to think about and have committees standing up to see what they can do. And of course, we really have to mention that sort of in the meantime, the UK has really stood up with a sort of pilot projects throughout the country by either NHS or some other funds. So the UK is actually really stepping up as one of the first European countries, let's say.
What, though, are the costs of doing this CT scanning at regular intervals, and is it affordable?
So we do think that if you start off with a sort of stringent criteria to get the CT scanning selective group, we do think that it's cost effective. So far we've done analysis for Switzerland once and Canada once based on the American trial. And because the European trial is basically even more positive, we do think it can be cost effective. But it's true, of course, yeah, the I guess the minimum cost of a scan is in the order of 100 and 150 euros or so. But again, it's about the benefits you get. So it is possible to come up with a program that maybe costs as much as breast cancer screening, but then gets actually more deaths prevented per year than a breast cancer screening program.
So what is the advice going forward for cancer prevention or cancer detection programs in Europe and indeed globally?
Yeah, so the future is now really stepping up with implementation trials, implementation research starting up at a high level of quality. That will be a real challenge. That may, and what the exact criteria is probably a little bit of debate still, but I would think that to start up, you would probably say, well, people between 60 and 80 or so as a start off, who had smoked for about 40 years or so, or quit smoking in the last 10 years, would probably be a reasonable approach in the beginning. And if you're sure that works, then you can probably expand and have even more cost involved or so. But to start off a bit more stringent, there's nothing wrong with that, to find out the quality of your program and the recruitment and the smoking cessation and so on.
Now, you mentioned the UK has made a what you consider to be quite a good start, America too. Specifically about the United States, how much better could the US do you think, by implementing this form of volume scanning?
Yeah, so I think in the past, I guess in the US, there was not so much experience with the volumetrics, or at least they hadn't done it in the trial, of course. More and more, I do see radiologists and at conferences confirming that volumetrics would probably be better to reduce false positive, to reduce anxiety, and simply get the same benefit. So, but it's I think there are all sorts of logistical issues that are still not debatable or not manageable. But I do indeed think that also for the US. Changing to more volumetric cutoffs is better.
And overall, in all countries, what's the take-home message in a few words, do you think, for cancer clinicians and also communities generally, and indeed primary healthcare systems?
So the message now is that lung cancer screening is effective, that there is also a reasonable harm-benefit ratio. So the positive side really outweighs the negative ones, if I'm saying it correctly in English. It can be cost-effective, and it can actually be, in absolute terms, more effective than some of the running programs at present. For instance, extremely more effective than cervical cancer screening, for instance, in many countries. So the next step would be really to step up implementing, but at high quality. So just putting a scanner somewhere or so, that's not the way forward. Really quality evaluation and then do a good thing for all these people that are at high risk.
Is there a risk that it could be a disincentive to adults to quit smoking? They might say, well, I can just have the scan.
Yeah, so I've always been joking that the moment we started the trial, I was sort of convinced that when there would be a positive result, that the headlines would be, you see, smokers are being rewarded for it, or something like that. But the issue indeed is that in the trials, we do not see that people with who had been scanned, that they would start smoking or that they would even increase their smoking. So actually what we see in the trials is actually that if you had the scan, you are probably even quitting a little bit more. And so, for instance, in the Yorkshire trial, there's a trial in the UK now where they are really trying to see whether just looking at the scans and so on even possibly increases your smoking cessation rate. So yes, it is a real concern, but in all the trials so far, we haven't seen it.